This CosmicReality.com presentation is sponsored by MysticalWares.com. Is there something wrong?
Warning. Life support failure on all decks. Abandon ship.
Maybe it is time to take command.
Bridge to Captain.
Join Jan Shaw, updating current events as only Jan can.
Library computer. Data being received.
Produced by CosmicReality.com.
Hello and welcome to Wednesday's Cosmic Creating Show. My name is Jan Shaw. I'm known as the Success Alchemist. You can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, empoweredmanifestation.com, on Facebook and YouTube, Jan Shaw, the Success Alchemist, and on Twitter at Coach Jan Shaw. Today is the 4th of May, 2022. And the title of today's show is Supreme Court Leak, Where is Durham, Food Crisis and 2,000 Mules. So I hope I have time to fit everything in because, of course, all hell has broken loose with this leak from the Supreme Court regarding Roe v. Wade. And it's interesting because there's this major hysteria from the left about women's rights, etc., etc., and saying that this is going to prevent women from having abortions anywhere. Well, of course, that's not the truth. It actually means that any rulings on abortion are going to be handled at the state level. And this is a draft majority opinion, which was actually written back in February. And that doesn't necessarily mean, apparently, that this is the final decision on this question. So I'm going to start with a Federalist article. The constitutional crisis that Roe v. Wade set in motion is now upon us. And this was actually published today. It's got a screenshot of the opinion piece, just the highlighted parts. Roe was egregiously wrong from the start, and it is time to heed the Constitution and return the issue of abortion to the people's elected representatives. Roe sowed the seeds of a crisis. This is the article. Roe sowed the seeds of a crisis that will end with America ceasing to be divided. We will become all one thing or all the other. The leak of a draft majority opinion of the US Supreme Court overturning Roe v. Wade and Casey v. Planned Parenthood, and with it our 50-year regime of legalized murder of the unborn, has rightly captured the nation's attention. It is without question the most important news story in the country, and if the draft decision stands, the most important political development in a generation. But it is also more than these things. Whether the draft opinion stands or falls, this is a great moment of moral clarity for the nation and a time of great peril. Now we see, as we rarely have over the past five decades, the severity of what Roe inaugurated in 1973 and Casey sustained in 1992. By snatching the question of abortion from the American people and their elected representatives, and doing so with such shoddy jurisprudence that it has since distorted many other areas of constitutional law, Roe divided the nation and sowed the seeds of a constitutional crisis. The contours of that crisis are now coming into view. What's clear already is that the left is willing to destroy every institution of American civic life to preserve their abortion regime. The day after the leak, the President of the United States, a man who once pushed for a constitutional amendment to overturn Roe, but has since surrendered to the demands of his party's ascendant left wing, took the extraordinary step of weighing in on an undecided Supreme Court case. While he was at it, he spouted exactly the kind of nonsense we have come to expect from him. And there's a tweet from Greg Price. Biden says, Roe says what all basic mainstream religions have historically concluded, that the existence of a human life and being is a question. in the clip that's included, and I'm not going to play it because there's an awful lot of background noise from the Marine One helicopter, basically saying the question is as to when does life begin? Is it at conception? Is it 6 weeks? Is it, you know, 6 months? Whatever. And, of course, you know, that's still under debate in terms of different rulings on when abortion, or at what point abortion should be allowed up to. Anyway, continuing the article, he wasn't alone. Nearly every leading Democrat made a statement about the case Tuesday. Some, like Senator Elizabeth Warren, in her breathless indignation, managed to be both pathetic and malevolent. The upshot is that it seems Democrats, no less than their courtesans in the media, are prepared to use every available tool at their disposal to intimidate the Supreme Court and bend it to their will. It is not too much to say, as my colleague Molly Hemingway did yesterday, that both the leak of the opinion and the ensuing reaction on the left amount to yet another insurrection attempt. This time the target is not the Trump White House, but the Supreme Court. We know already that President Biden and the Democrats are willing to pack the court if they conclude they have lost control over it. They admitted as much during the 2020 election. Packing the court is just a euphemism for destroying it, as it would then become just another political branch of the federal government. This should not surprise us. Whenever the left feels they have lost control of an institution, they try to destroy it. In addition to the Democrats' political warfare, we're seeing another powerful and familiar tool of the left emerge, the violent mob. As if on cue, a chorus arose Monday night and Tuesday morning among pro-abortion activists on Twitter that if Roe is overturned, they would burn it all down. Such incendiary language might have once been considered figurative or rhetorical, but after the Black Lives Matter riots of 2020, we know they really mean it. When the decision comes down, if Roe is overturned, expect riots and worse. In the near term, expect threats on the lives of the justices who vote with the majority. Crisis of a House divided. Some have taken a rather more benign view of all this, suggesting that if the draft opinion is adopted and Roe is overturned, federalism will allow us to sort out our differences on abortion. Some states will ban it outright, as Texas and a dozen other states have prepared to do, with so-called trigger laws. Some will enshrine abortion access in law, as California has already done. Once we are all sorted, the two sides can live and let live. But I do not think it will happen quite like that. One reason is that the left will not allow it. To the left, abortion is sacred. More than any other political issue or policy preference, it encapsulates a worldview that insists on limitless personal autonomy and recognizes no unchosen obligations. It declares that some people deserve absolutely no protection under the law. In that sense, it transcends politics. It is a kind of creed, an inversion of our founding creed, all men are not created equal. That should sound familiar, because this is not the first time such a creed has been adopted by a vast swathe of the country. There is no polite way to say it, and the left hates it when you point it out. But the historical antecedent to the modern left's fervour for abortion is the antebellum South's fervour for chattel slavery. Like the abortion regime, the Southern slave regime also had a rigid worldview at odds with the Constitution and natural law. It too was willing to destroy the country rather than relinquish its worldview and way of life. The intellectual architects of the slave power were honest about their project. They meant to overthrow the Constitution, which John C. Calhoun thought was based on the lie that all men are created equal. Today's pro-abortion lobby is finally coming around to something close to that level of honesty. It is hard to imagine a more candid exposition of their view than when Virginia Delegate Kathy Tran, during a legislative hearing in 2019 for a bill that would have loosened restrictions on late-term abortions, admitted that her bill would allow for abortion up to the moment of birth. Abraham Lincoln understood the Southern slave creed for what it was. He knew that compromise with the slave regime was not possible, that the United States could not endure permanently half slave and half free. I do not expect the Union to be dissolved. I do not expect the House to fall, but I do expect it will cease to be divided, he said in his famous 1858 speech. It will become all one thing or all the other. This is not 1858. We are not on the precipice of a civil war. Well, we may be, who knows? But it is not too soon to recognize this crisis for what it is, to admit that we cannot endure with half the country allowing the murder of the unborn and half outlawing it. Eventually, we will become all one thing or all the other. So I'm not particularly familiar with the Roe v. Wade case, but I have seen that the woman who was the Roe, I think she was a Jane Roe, actually came out, and it's on film, where she admitted that her claim to have been gang raped and pregnant as a result, which was the key element in this case, she admitted it was an actual lie and that she wasn't gang raped at all. So that in itself kind of questions the ruling in that case. As a result of the leak, Chief Justice Roberts has actually called for an investigation by the marshals of the court. People are saying, well, why isn't the FBI involved in finding who the leaker was? And why isn't the leaker being treated like James O'Keefe of Project Veritas? And what's happened is, with all this abortion debate, is that it's actually brought out into the public square the exposure of the methods of abortion. And I was going through Telegram and I found a short video of a doctor explaining to Congress the process for a second trimester abortion. And it is absolutely horrific. It's quite literally a dismemberment of this child in the womb, literally tearing it limb from limb, crushing the skull. You know, it's just unbelievable. And this is at a point after the baby has actually started moving. You know, the mother feels the kicks and everything else. And I just cannot fathom anybody allowing that to happen. And even, as it said in the article, you've got people advocating for abortion to be legal based on the mental issues of the mother, literally up to the point of birth, literally when the cervix is dilated, when she is in labour, she can choose to so-called abort the baby, which is basically murder it. And there's even a law, and I think it's California, where you can actually commit infanticide legally up until 28 days after birth. I mean, if this isn't demonic, I don't know what is. There's also the other side of the abortion industry, with Planned Parenthood selling aborted body parts for huge amounts of money to these research projects and so on, the use of fetal body parts or fetal cells in vaccine development, and so it goes on. So there's far more to this than just the story about women's rights and should they be allowed to have abortions. I don't particularly want to get into the rights and wrongs of this, but I think there are cases where potentially very, very early stage abortion could be allowed, literally within the first few weeks. Texas, I think it is, has said you can have an abortion up to 6 weeks, but not after that. And that, to me, I think is kind of a midway option. And nowadays, pregnancy tests can detect the pregnancy so early, there is absolutely no excuse for later term abortions unless the baby has major, major health issues and is unlikely to survive. But even then, doctors have, you know, made that call. The mother's decided to go ahead to full term, and the child has actually survived and been relatively healthy. And so, you know, we know that doctors are not infallible. So it is a very hot debate at the moment. So obviously you need to make your own minds about which side of the fence you are on, and we'll see what pans out as the final decision on this is made public by the Supreme Court. Well, I mentioned on previous show that I've been watching a two-part video, which was primarily Mike Adams interviewing David Wilcock, but with quite a lot of clips of related to ET disclosure. But there are a couple of things I just wanted to pick out of that. I mean, one section was a guy called Pete Peterson talking about mind control. He said that 15% of people are not susceptible to mind control and have ET DNA. That's the reason. They run in family tree lines. But he says, I seem to be the only one in my family. Maybe Mike Adams is one as well, according to David, because obviously he's into all the alternative news and exposure of the truth, etc., etc., as are all of us here. I mean, we wouldn't be here if we were mind controlled and brainwashed. David also weighs in on the subject of the so-called vaccines. He says the only way the Alliance would allow these injections is if they have an antidote and treatments available to mitigate the damage caused by these injections. And he does reference MedBeds several times. And then much later in part two of The Moment of Truth, he says Dracos are landing on the White House lawn every day. The Dracos are the, you know, nasty ETs, shall I say. And they meet under the White House with decision makers. Even the cabal is not free. They're controlled and treated like shit by the Dracos. And the Dracos themselves are controlled by a power above them, which is interesting. Obviously, there's a lot more in this two-part series. It's really worth looking at. And it's actually on brand new tube. If you do a search for Mike Adams and David Wilcock, The Moment of Truth, you should find it there. But I would recommend it if you can spare the time. And the other interesting thing that he said is don't eat anything that contains citric acid or wheat, which was interesting. Now, I discovered something very interesting, and it is connected to what David said. It's also connected to the food crisis. And it's reporting on something I had absolutely no idea existed or happened. And it's a report by the burningplatform.com from the 29th of April. And it says Amish farmer faces $250,000 fine, jail time, and losing his sustainable farm for processing his own meat. And it's Amos Miller Organic Farm. Amos Miller's private food club members say they don't want their grass-fed meat treated with chemical preservatives required by all USDA-approved processing plants. Amos Miller says he is being persecuted by the federal government for practicing his religious freedom to raise and prepare food the way he believes God intended food to be raised and prepared, in accordance with nature. Miller practices rotational grazing on his small, holistically managed, century-old farm in Bird in Hand, Pennsylvania. His heritage breed cows are raised on organic pastures, with the chickens following behind, eating the bugs from their droppings, and whey-fed pigs trampling all the fertilizer back into the ground after that. Around 4,000 customers of his private members-only food buying club are dependent on his meat, eggs and dairy products, as well as fermented fruits and veggies, and are willing to spend top dollar to get it shipped to them all over the country, as they don't trust food from the grocery store. But a couple of weeks ago, a federal judge told Miller to cease and desist all meat sales and sent armed US marshals to search his property, farm store and freezers. They took an inventory of all his meat to make sure he doesn't sell any or slaughter any more animals. Last summer, the judge also ordered Miller to pay $250,000 for contempt of court, and said he will also have to pay the salaries of the USDA investigators assigned to his case, $50,000 of which was due last week as a good faith payment, to avoid jail. The court's next hearing on Miller's case will be this Tuesday, April 12th. Please show up if you can. Details below. Obviously, this was published a while ago. So what exactly is Miller's crime? Slaughtering and processing the meat he raises on his own farm and selling it fresh frozen to members of his private food buying club, who've all signed contracts stating they understand the meat is not processed in USDA inspected plants or treated with USDA required chemical preservatives. Because that's how they want it, and the very reason they are willing to go to such great lengths to get it. But the USDA thinks his customers are too stupid to think for themselves and need them to come in and protect them from themselves. You probably don't know, because I didn't until Miller told me, and I didn't until I read this article, that all USDA licensed processing plants are required to treat all meat, even the local grass-fed organic variety, with synthetic preservatives. Often they use citric acid, which you'd think comes from oranges or lemons, but it's a modified substance made from corn, and they don't even have to label it on the meat, Miller said. So interesting that David Wilcock should have said, don't eat anything that contains citric acid. And I had absolutely no idea that they treated meat, raw meat, with these chemicals. So carrying on, the USDA processing plants require the meat to be treated with a chemical cocktail of citric acid, lactic acid and peracetic acid, said a customer who handles Miller's website and other modern communications, because he's Amish, or Amish, I think it's pronounced. The peracetic acid is toxic and the citric and lactic are GMO. It's not lactic acid coming from the fermentation of sauerkraut. It's all created in a dish in a lab. It's a synthetic steriliser that causes many health problems. Anki, who preferred not to use her last name, told me. Our members don't want any of that, Miller said. They want fresh raw meat with no additives. Our members want it straight from the farm with no preservatives on it. As a farmer, you could invest all your energy and money producing the most healthy, nourishing meat, and at the end of the day, you are ruining your meat, sending your animals to a USDA facility for slaughter, Anki added. Additionally, USDA-approved processing plants aren't allowed to sell certain organ meats and glands for human consumption. The very nutrient-dense organs that seem to help people, they want to ban, Miller said. I'm not going to read the rest of this because I need to move on to other things, but this is linked to the food crisis, because if this farmer goes out of business, then that's another source of good, healthy meat and produce, which won't be available otherwise. And he also, the farmer also mentioned many other farmers going out of business or being paid by the government to not produce crops or food of any kind. And in the UK, the government has been offering money to farmers to actually close their business, to stop farming. So there's a definite conspiracy going on here to cause a huge crisis of food shortages. And I'll carry on with this topic. I'm going a little bit out of sequence here from what I put as the title, but this is dailyveracity.com reporting the global food supply is collapsing, food plants exploding, farms set ablaze, and millions of chickens are being killed. This was from the 29th of April. Many experts have been explaining the record inflation the US is facing simply on supply chain issues caused by COVID-19. But these disruptions in the supply chain were not merely a spontaneous effect of a pandemic. In early 2020, the federal government declared a national emergency and the entire country shut down for months, which produced the initial supply chain issues that led to many of the problems we're experiencing today. Eventually, the majority of the medical community conceded that the imposed shelter-in-place policies caused more deaths than if there were no shutdowns at all. Yet every institution continues to act as if it was the virus, not their reaction, that produced these problems. The issues that lockdowns caused soon worsened after the federal government, advised by the CDC, printed a record amount of money, injected trillions of dollars into the economy, and then introduced a moratorium on the payment of rent and mortgage. These actions worsened the record business closures and worker shortage, which further exacerbated the supply chain issues. As bad as everything is now, though, it seems like somehow it's about to get a lot worse. Over the past few months, dozens of food processing plants have either exploded or caught on fire. Barns have also been spontaneously bursting into flames, and tens of millions of chickens have been exterminated since November of last year. On March 21st, a Walmart distribution center in Indianapolis caught fire, requiring over 350 firefighters to extinguish it. In February, an explosion caused significant damage at Shearer's Foods in Hermiston, Oregon, and in April, a food processing plant in Salinas, California, suffered a large fire leading to local evacuations. Additionally, small planes have also crashed into two food processing plants in Idaho and Georgia within weeks of each other. These are just a few examples of what many are calling an attack on our food supply chain while it is already in an extremely vulnerable state. And there's a tweet from Wall Street Silver. This is an odd coincidence. 18 US food processing facilities burned down in the last 6 months. Asia Standards HQ burned down yesterday, and it's got screenshots of the different headlines about these food processing plants and distribution centres. Tim Young says in a tweet, "Is there a coordinated attack on our food processing plants? There have been too many accidents," in quotes, "in the last month to not start to think it." The Guardian recently released a detailed analysis of a mass culling at a plant in Rembrandt, Iowa, in response to a new bird flu threat, which was previously believed to be contained within the borders of Asia. The report states that after detecting a single case of avian influenza, overnight the factory slaughtered more than 5 million chickens using a gruesome killing method. The slaughter of at least 5 million hens at Rembrandt is the largest culling at any factory farm in the country. Now, meat processing plants across North America are bracing for what experts fear could be a catastrophic loss of poultry. According to another article from the New York Times, another 27 million birds were culled due to the bird flu, which scientists say they are using PCR tests to detect. Oh dear, we know what they do. The popular news site Heavy.com also reported on the culling. As of early April, the outbreak had caused the culling of some 23 million birds from Maine to Wyoming. "We have diagnostic tests for much more rapid and improved detection of avian influenza compared to 20 to 30 years ago, using molecular diagnostics such as PCR tests, the same method labs use to detect COVID-19 infections." And we know how unreliable they are. Heavy.com tweets, "Bird flu is highly contagious in domestic flocks and a major outbreak is underway in the US. A veterinary scientist explains what consumers need to know. And it's a link there to the article. Quebec duck farming operation that detected a strain of avian flu at three of its facilities says it has to slaughter 150,000 birds and lay off nearly 300 employees. That was a CBC News Alerts tweet. In addition to this, Northern Ireland, and this is just lunacy, is planning to kill off more than 1 million sheep and cattle to meet its new legally binding climate emissions targets. According to a report from The Guardian, Northern Ireland will need to kill more than 1 million sheep and cattle to meet new climate targets after passing its first major climate act. The massive reduction in farm animals is based on a legal requirement under the Act for the farming sector to reach net zero carbon emissions by 2050 and reduce methane emissions by almost 50%. Meanwhile, in Australia, pork supply is set to plunge as Japanese encephalitis has been reportedly detected across piggeries. Around 30 New South Wales piggeries have been affected so far by the mosquito-borne virus, and 11 people have been infected, with 3 deaths nationwide. They have had huge impacts on production, up to 60 to 80% of production impacted in some sites, said New South Wales Department of Primary Industries Chief Veterinary Officer Sarah Britton. The disease has no impact on the safety of consuming pork, but Dr. Britton said production losses were likely to affect availability. And then we've got other issues. The ongoing war in Ukraine also has had a massive effect on shipments of fertilizer and wheat, as Russia and Ukraine are part of the top 5 exporters of wheat to the world. Because of this, Lebanese mills are quickly running out of wheat as Lebanon, Syria and countries in Africa head towards seemingly inevitable famine. The US is the number 2 wheat exporter in the world, but recent agricultural reports conclude that US winter wheat is at its lowest condition rating in over a decade. And the USDA reports 69% of total US winter wheat production is currently in drought zones. We've also got a shortage of fertilizer. CF Industries, a leading global distributor of fertilizer, reports Union Pacific notified the company they will be limiting shipments of fertilizer by nearly 20% during the spring planting season. In March, Tony Will, the chief executive of CF Industries, warned, "My biggest concern is that we end up with a very severe shortage of food in certain areas of the world." Tim Young, in a tweet, says, "Is there a coordinated attack on our food processing plants? There have been too many accidents in the last month to not start to think about it." And Patrick Hill responds, "Add to this, Union Pacific notified America's largest distributor of fertilizer, CF Industries, that they will be limiting shipments by nearly 20%. The timing of this action by Union Pacific could not come at a worse time for farmers," said CF CEO Tony Will in a press release. Beginning in 2020, a string of countless barn fires occurred across America and in Europe in what media outlets called a strange anomaly, similar to the fires and explosions at food processing plants happening today. Throughout 2021 and into 2022, an even higher rate of barn fires seems to be occurring, with many of them started by arson. Interestingly, the FBI recently warned that currently there is a high risk of farms also being targeted in cyber attacks, which would also heavily affect the food industry. So I'm just going to jump down to the end. Too big of a coincidence to be just a coincidence. A top Biden official said recently that the global food shortage would push farmers towards green energy. "Never let a crisis go to waste," said USAID chief Samantha Power. "Fertilizer shortages are real now because Russia is a big exporter of fertilizer. Even though fertilizer is not sanctioned, less fertilizer is coming out of Russia," Power explained. "As a result, we're working with countries to think about natural solutions like manure and compost and this may hasten transitions that would have been in the interest of farmers to make eventually anyway. So never let a crisis go to waste. President Biden's energy secretary, Jennifer Granholm, also made similar remarks at a clean energy summit back in March. The crisis in Europe and the crisis our allies are facing and the reduction of supply of natural gas and oil from Russia creates a moment that we should be acting, Granholm said. The prolonging of war in Ukraine with the US and NATO continuously sending arms as well as the pipelines being shut down by the Biden administration appear to be deliberate actions that are also further causing a devastating impact on the global food supply. In April of 2021, the Biden administration escalated a decades-old climate program that pays farmers not to farm. The plan, known as the Conservation Reserve Program, takes land out of production for 10 to 15 years. And this is a very long article, so I'm not going to have time to read it all, but it also references Klaus Schwab stating that global energy systems, food systems, and supply chains will soon be deeply affected. Now, we know with the Great Reset that, Bill Gates and the like, Bill Gates is the largest landowner in the US, and that's not to mention what China owns. They want you to stop eating meat. They want you to be eating this lab-created concoction of chemicals, which just beggars belief. It's horrendous stuff. This seems to be planned in terms of food shortages and everything else that the New World Order wants to use to subjugate the people and make them comply and control them and everything else. It's very much along the lines, in my opinion, of what they're trying to do with the social credit scoring. You know, you will own nothing and be happy. You will eat shit and be happy. It's a bit like Soylent Green, the movie. So, you know, people are in the alternative community are saying get some emergency food supplies. And, you know, my issue is I live in an RV. I don't have that much storage space. And to be honest, much of the emergency food supplies that you can buy are not that nutritious, and they're mainly carbs. And to be honest, I'm not a fan of the typical food that you can get in those kits. But I've been stocking up with other things within the space I have, canned food and so on. And hopefully we don't get to the stage of it being as bad as what is being predicted in terms of food shortages. One of the things, I think it was in this article as well, was saying is that there used to be significant food reserves, a little bit like the gas, reserves, which have been allowed to be decimated. They've dwindled down to nothing. So there isn't that emergency backup if we do have problems with food production. So it's not a very cheering prospect. But, you know, I have to say, as I've said multiple times, we are watching a movie. I really don't think that the White Hats will allow this to develop into a full-blown famine and food crisis. Well, let's hope so anyway. So on to my topic of where is Durham? And I'm actually going to give you an update on the latest from the Durham investigation. But we were wondering where Durham is. Nobody's really seen him. X22 Report actually said on a recent video, and if you remember, I said that David Wilcock believes that X22 Report, Dave, actually gets briefings from the White Hats. But he said about Durham, has nobody seen him because he's under military protection? See the executive order on 18th of January 2021, which is protecting law enforcement, judges, prosecutors and their families. And he also mentions it could be related to devolution, which, of course, I've covered quite extensively in previous shows. Anyway, the latest news hot off the press about the Durham investigation is Durham convinces judge to review concealed documents in Clinton privilege battle. And this was actually only published an hour ago, which actually I'm pre-recording this, so it was about 12:30 Arizona time. And it's by Gazette.com. And it says the judge in the case of Democratic cybersecurity lawyer Michael Sussman has agreed to review dozens of records currently withheld because of assertions of attorney-client privilege by Hillary Clinton's 2016 presidential campaign to see if they have been improperly concealed. The agreement is a win for special counsel John Durham in his case against Sussman, who has been indicted on charges of concealing his clients, the Clinton campaign, and tech executive Rodney Joffe from FBI General Counsel James Baker when he pushed eventually debunked claims of a secret back channel between the Trump Organization and Russia's Alpha Bank. Judge Christopher Cooper said Wednesday he would grant the government's motion, arguing he did not believe it was breaking attorney-client privilege for him to review the records in dispute in an in-camera setting away from the public and the press. British ex-spy Christopher Steele created a dossier on then-candidate Donald Trump after being hired by the opposition research firm Fusion GPS, which was itself hired by the Perkins Coie law firm and Mark Elias, the general counsel for Clinton's campaign. The judge repeatedly pointed to the difference between hiring a firm to do fact-checking versus hiring it to do opposition research. Hillary for America, the DNC and Perkins argue claims of attorney-client privilege should keep the records concealed and claim Fusion simply provided them legal services. Durham is insisting those groups played a coordinated role in pushing false collusion claims. The judge said he didn't doubt Elias's claims about Fusion being hired to provide legal advice, but said that didn't mean everything Fusion did in 2016 is covered by privilege. The judge said he would review the Joffe records too. It remains to be seen how the judge will rule on the privilege claims after taking a look at the Alpha Bank-related documents. 30 are internal Fusion emails and 8 relate to Joffe and Fusion. Clinton's 2016 campaign and Fusion united in court on Wednesday. Fusion's lawyer said the firm asserted privilege over 1,500 documents, adding it also produced hundreds of documents. Fusion said the Clinton campaign, DNC and Perkins had made judgment calls on what was privileged. The judge asked Durham prosecutor Jonathan Algor whether Durham would come back for the other 1,500 documents if the judge ended up agreeing with the prosecution about these 38 records. Algor said not for this trial, but left the door open for the future, saying that Your Honor's decision is important for the investigation. Algor told the judge the Clinton campaign and Fusion wrongly advanced a very broad and novel theory of attorney-client privilege that opposition research is somehow protected. He pointed to Fusion emails that have been released and said nothing shows any of that related to legal advice. Algor stressed the opposition research was pushed to the FBI, Congress and the media. Durham plans to call Fusion's tech maven, Laura Sego, to testify, including Fusion's role, with a white paper Sussman pushed to the FBI. Sussman lawyer Sean Berkovich lamented the government charged a case with attorneys and privilege all over the place and called it almost a law school hypothetical. He said the judge's ruling could have a ripple effect and could end up calling thousands of documents into question related to prior privilege assertions. He also said letting Sego speak at the trial would be unduly prejudicial. Algor countered that the prosecution had cabined the trial to a single Fusion witness and a few dozen documents. He said Sego had key evidence about the attorney-client relationship and that she would be a Fusion witness tied to Sussman, the Clinton campaign, and Joffe. Clinton campaign lawyer Robert Trout argued The government here has an erroneously cramped view of privilege and called it a false choice to say something is either opposition research or covered by privilege. He said it is true that Donald Trump was an opposition candidate, but claimed Fusion had been hired to help with legal advice for the campaign. He said it may have been research about an opposition candidate, but the real purpose was to get our facts straight. The Clinton campaign's filing last week included a declaration from Elias, who claimed Fusion's role was to provide consulting services that Perkins was giving related to defamation and libel laws. Fusion co-founders Glenn Simpson and Peter Fritsch wrote in their 2019 book that they met with Elias in April 2016. Fritsch told Elias, "We think you guys will really want to pay attention to the Russia angle." This angle was all new to Elias and he loved it, Fusion said. The judge quoted from an email by Fritsch to a reporter in October 2016, in which the Fusion co-founder said to do the effing Alpha Bank secret comms story. The judge said, "How is that assisting Mr. Elias providing legal advice? That is assisting a media strategy." The judge said he was not convinced that the Clinton campaign should just have a blanket assertion of privilege. Trout contended the prosecution's argument suggested Mr. Elias's sworn statements are not to be believed, and I don't think that's appropriate. The judge again made a distinction between fact-checking and disseminating opposition research. Fusion's lawyer also argued the firm had no knowledge of Sussman's meeting with the FBI and tried to argue it was irrelevant to the indictment. And it looks like this was originally published on the Washington Examiner News. So Gazette is just re-reporting it. There was also an earlier report back on 28th of April that I don't believe I've reported on, which was from dailyheadlines.com. Durham drops bomb, lying Adam Schiff was involved in Russian collusion sham in 2016. All of us know that Adam Schiff was involved in Russiagate, but since the very beginning, according to newly emerged details from the ongoing Durham investigation, both Adam Schiff and Diane Feinstein were named as recipients of Fusion GPS emails dating back to 2016. What were they doing by talking to Fusion GPS way back then? Personally, I think that it won't be too long before Schiff is eventually dragged into court over this. Sussman's trial begins next month, which is this month. It's May 16th, I believe. And once that happens, much more information is going to come to light. If I were him, I'd be trembling at the development of Fusion GPS emails entering into evidence as well as the public interest. Here's what we currently know. And a tweet from Undead FOIA. "Hey Adam Smith, why does Fusion GPS seem to think you have information on Carter Page in July 2016? How many communications did you exchange with Fusion GPS personnel during 2016 to 2017? And there's a screenshot of an email that says, "Call Adam Schiff, or Diffie for that matter. I bet they're concerned about what Page was doing other than giving a speech over 3 days in Moscow." And then a tweet from Mark Nance. "Durham drops bomb, lying Adam Schiff was involved in Russia collusion sham way back in July 2016, and he's chairman select committee on intelligence. Deep state is real. There is much in this latest release, but one item in particular is that Adam Schiff was involved in this lie from the beginning. Red State reports, Durham also derides the claim that Fusion was hired for legal work, calling that a novel way to cover up opposition research and the derogatory information that they then spread against President Donald Trump and his team. He says that despite efforts, the parties have failed to provide meaningful, substantive explanations to support these continuing broad assertions of privilege and/or work product protections. A number of emails have been released in Durham's latest, One showed that Pencil Neck Adam Schiff was involved in the Russia collusion lie as early as July 2016. John Bond tweets, Durham has now come out with evidence that Adam Schiff was very deep into the fake Russia hoax. He is as involved as Hillary. And Pat Fisher tweets, the bell tolls for thee. GP, which is Gateway Pundit, Joe Hoft, April 26, 2022, Durham drops bomb. Adam Schiff was involved in Russia collusion sham way back in July 2016. One email showed that Adam Smith was involved in the Russia collusion lie as early as July 2016, with eyes wide open. Schiff later released a report on Russia collusion that was all lies. He received no penalties for doing so. Doesn't mention Dianne Feinstein in that report, but obviously, you know, Durham is uncovering more and more collusion across the DNC and the Democrat Party against not only candidate Trump, but also President Trump. Now, the last thing I want to cover is 2000 Mules, which is the movie or documentary produced by Dinesh D'Souza about the election fraud. And I'm going to go through an article from Nick Moseder at Substack. Is 2000 Mules an absolute game changer? And this was published yesterday. I don't know if I'm going to have time for all of it, because it's a pretty long, detailed article, but let's see how far we get. This article is a full breakdown based on the notes I took during 2000 Mules, which document the overall main points of the film, followed by my personal thoughts and feelings for Substack supporters. Incidentally, the official premiere of the film, which is going to be out in movie theatres on the 7th of May. That's the official date of release. So this guy must have got a preview copy. The film begins with a familiar reel of news clips, a painstaking reminder that Trump was winning in a landslide on election night when mysteriously Allegheny County, Butler County, Beaver County, Westmoreland County, Fulton County, Luzerne County, and the state of Nevada all simultaneously stopped counting without explanation. When they resumed, Biden miraculously gained just the precise amount of votes overnight to be declared the victor. The inevitable legal challenges that followed the election were dismissed by courts for lack of standing, while all major media outlets began referring to claims of election fraud as the big lie. Ultimately, the momentum of the populist uprising which followed was shattered by a tsunami of big tech censorship justified by a false flag that occurred at the Capitol on January 6th. Dinesh D'Souza finally hits the screen. While slowly walking through an empty polling station, Dinesh reminds us of the blood, sweat and tears, the sacrifices made by our forefathers who established our constitutional republic against all odds. He emphasized the significance of the freedoms which many of us have taken for granted and states that without elections, we don't have a country. While this all may seem redundant for those of us who've been following this every waking moment of every day, I felt that the beginning of the movie brilliantly set the stage for the average observer who may not be aware of the way this all unfolded. The main premise of the movie begins when Dinesh sits down with a group of prominent conservatives and asks them their opinion on whether the 2020 election was stolen. Charlie Kirk was somewhat sceptical but willing to admit that something clearly happened. Larry Elder stated that the media propagandized against Trump so much that he could see how left-wing activists would be willing to rig an election but hadn't seen the evidence. Sebastian Gorka emphatically stated that there was no way a guy who campaigned from his basement and who couldn't put a sentence together defeated Donald Trump, who could draw 60,000 people to a rally. Dennis Prager stated the oddity that Republicans did so well down ballot, but Trump lost. This doesn't make sense. But he said, I haven't seen the proof. Dinesh sits down with Catherine Engelbrecht and Greg Phillips from True the Vote. as well as a bilingual woman who explained that she became a poll watcher when she overheard a Hispanic voter being told who to vote for. True the Vote spent roughly 15 minutes explaining that they were able to identify 2,000 plus ballot harvesters using 2 petabytes of geofencing cell phone ping data purchased from brokers. Catherine and Greg hired high-level contractors to plug this data into a supercomputer in Texas, sift through trillions of cell phone pings to develop patterns of life and identify ballot harvesting mules. The threshold for what constituted a mule was set incredibly high. In order to meet their criteria, a mule had to visit at least 10 drop boxes and visit a non-profit where ballots were said to have been collected, aka stash houses, at least 5 times. They showed an example of one of these so-called patterns of life using a mule from Atlanta who visited 28 drop boxes in 1 day. These patterns of life are so precise that they were able to use their data to identify 2 active shooters in an old Michigan murder. When they turned the evidence over to the FBI was able to get convictions, thus proving that their methodology is reliable enough to be used by law enforcement. Now add to the geofencing data 4 million minutes of Dropbox video surveillance footage obtained via FOIA Freedom of Information Act requests. In the film True the Vote shows several videos, many of which had already been leaked on the internet, of the same mules that they identified via their geofencing data, ballot harvesting on video. Add to that the chain of custody documentation from ballot drop boxes. Using their geofencing data, they identified instances where a box that was only visited by 271 people somehow contained 1,900 ballots. Impossible. Was there enough fraud to change the results for Biden? Possibly the most compelling part of the film were the actual numbers given by True the Vote. Using their threshold of 10 visits to drop boxes, averaging 5 ballots per visit, True the Vote claims there were 380,000 illegal votes cast in the 2020 election. Michigan, 500 mules visited 50 boxes equals 125,000 illegal votes, not enough to swing the state for Biden. Wisconsin, 100 mules visited 28 boxes, 14,000 illegal votes, not enough to swing the state for Biden. Georgia, 250 mules visited 24 boxes, 30,000 illegal votes, far more than enough to swing the state for Biden. Arizona, 200 mules visited 20 drop boxes equals 20,000 illegal votes, far more than enough to swing the state for Biden. Pennsylvania, 1,150 mules visited 45 boxes equals 275,000 illegal ballots, far more than enough to swing the state for Biden. Result, Trump won 279 to 259 electoral votes. And here's where things get even more interesting. When they lowered the criteria for what constitutes a mule from 10 drop boxes to 5, this gave a shocking 54,000 mules, 810,000 illegal votes, and Trump won every key state. The new totals showed Trump receiving 305 to Biden's 233 electoral votes. I'm going to jump to the end, to the conclusion. The movie ends with the same group of prominent conservatives reacting to the slew of evidence they just reviewed. Not a single one was left doubting whether or not the election was stolen. It was an emphatic and unanimous yes. The evidence was so overwhelmingly compelling that the men vowed to fight this rigged system to their dying breath. Finally, Dinesh returns to the same empty polling place to close the movie with a monologue about how imperative it is for the people of this country to get involved and fight back. So if you're interested in watching the movie and don't particularly want to go to one of the movie houses, you can watch it virtually. And I also believe it's going to be put out on Rumble as well. So we'll all have an opportunity to see that and draw our own conclusions. So that's all I have time for today. I hope you'll join me for another Cosmic Creating show on Saturday. I'd like to remind you that you can find me at thesuccessalchemist.net, thewebalchemist.net, and empoweredmanifestation.com. And thank you to Nancy for producing, and also to Derek Condit of mysticalwares.com, who is the sponsor of the Cosmic Reality radio station, makes all this possible. And really, I urge you to visit mysticalwares.com. They have a wonderful range of crystals and other metaphysical goods. And by supporting them, you support everything that we do at Cosmic Reality Radio. So until next time, stay well, be safe, and bye for now.
You have been listening to Cosmic Creating with Jan Shaw, updating current reality, a production of CosmicReality.com.
Thank you for listening to Cosmic Reality Radio. We appreciate your support. Please visit our sponsor at mysticalwares.com for our huge selection of metaphysical products, gifts, candles, incense, and one of the largest shungite collections available.
Cosmic Reality Radio is sponsored by Mystical Wares online store, where coupon code SAVE10 will get you 10% off your entire order at mysticalwares.com.